With great efforts they checked the boats and slowly brought them about, but at first they could make only small headway against the current, and all the time they were carried nearer and nearer to the eastern bank. Now dark and ominous it loomed up in the night.
"All together, paddle!" shouted Boromir. "Paddle, or we shall be driven on the shoals!"
Even as he spoke, Frodo felt the keel beneath him grate upon stone. At that moment there was a twang of bowstrings. Several arrows whistled over them, and some fell among them. One smote Frodo between the shoulders, and he lurched forward with a cry, letting go his paddle. But the arrow fell back, foiled by his hidden coat of mail. Another passed through Aragorn's hood, and a third stood fast in the gunwale of the second boat, close by Merry's hand. Sam thought he could glimpse black figures running to and fro upon the long shingle banks that lay under the eastern shore. They seemed very near.
"Ir," said Legolas, falling into his own tongue.
"Orcs," cried Gimli.
"Gollum's doing, I'll be bound," said Sam to Frodo, "and a nice place to choose, too. The river seems set on taking us right into their arms." They all leaned forward, straining at the paddles. Even Sam took a hand. Every moment they expected to feel the bite of black-feathered arrows. Many whined overhead or struck the water nearby, but there were no more hits. It was dark, but not too dark for the night eyes of orcs, and in the star glimmer they must have offered their cunning foes some mark, unless it was that the grey cloaks of Lorien and the grey timber of the elf-wrought boats defeated the malice of the archers of Mordor. Stroke by stroke they laboured on. In the darkness it was hard to be sure that they were moving at all, but slowly the swirl of the water grew less, and the shadow of the eastern bank faded back into the night. At last, as far as they could judge, they had reached the middle of the stream again, and had driven their boats back some distance above the jutting rocks. Then, half-turning, they thrust them with all their strength towards the western shore. Under the shadow of bushes leaning out over the water, they halted and drew breath. Legolas laid down his paddle and took up the bowl that he had brought from Lorien. Then he sprang ashore and climbed a few paces up the bank. Stringing the bow and fitting an arrow, he turned, peering back over the river into the darkness. Across the water there were shrill cries, but nothing could be seen. Frodo looked up at the elf standing tall above him as he gazed into the night, seeking a mark to shoot at. His head was dark, crowned with sharp white stars that glittered in the black pools of the sky behind. But now, rising and sailing up from the south, the great clouds advanced, sending out dark outriders into the starry fields. A sudden dread fell on the company.
"Elbereth, Gilthoniel," sighed Legolas as he looked up. Even as he did so, a dark shape, like a cloud and yet not a cloud, for it moved far more swiftly, came out of the blackness in the south and sped towards the company, blotting out all light as it approached. Soon it appeared as a great winged creature, blacker than the pits in the night. Fierce voices rose up to greet it from across the water. Frodo felt a sudden chill running through him and clutching at his heart. There was a deadly cold, like the memory of an old wound, in his shoulder. He crouched down, as if to hide. Suddenly the great bow of Lorien sang. Shrill went the arrow from the elven string. Frodo looked up. Almost above him the winged shape swerved. There was a harsh, croaking scream as it fell out of the air, vanishing down into the gloom of the eastern shore. The sky was clean again. There was a tumult of many voices far away, cursing and wailing in the darkness, and then silence. Neither shaft nor cry came again from the east that night. After a while Aragorn led the boats back upstream. They felt their way along the water's edge for some distance, until they found a small, shallow bay. A few low trees grew there close to the water, and behind them rose a steep, rocky bank. Here the company decided to stay and await the dawn. It was useless to attempt to move further by night. They made no camp and lit no fire, but lay huddled in the boats, moored close together.
"Praised be the bow of Galadriel and the hand and eye of Legolas,"
said Gimli, as he munched a wafer of Lembas.
"That was a mighty shot in the dark, my friend."
"But who can say what it hit?" said Legolas.
"I cannot," said Gimli, "but I'm glad that the shadow came no nearer. I liked it not at all. Too much it reminded me of the shadow in Moria, the shadow of the Balrog,"
he ended in a whisper. "It was not a Balrog," said Frodo, still shivering with the chill that had come upon him. "It was something colder. I think it was..." Then he paused and fell silent.
"What do you think?"
asked Boromir eagerly, leaning from his boat, as if he was trying to catch a glimpse of Frodo's face.
"I think... No, I will not say," answered Frodo. "Whatever it was, its fall has dismayed our enemies." "So it seems," said Aragorn. "Yet where they are, and how many, and what they will do next, we do not know. This night we must all be sleepless. Dark hides us now, but what the day will show, who can tell? Have your weapons close to hand?"
Sam sat tapping the hilt of his sword, as if he were counting on his fingers, and looking up at the sky. "It's very strange," he murmured. "The moon's the same in the Shire and in Wilderland, or it ought to be, but either it's out of its running, or I'm all wrong in my reckoning. You'll remember, Mr. Frodo, the moon was waning as we lay on the flat up in that tree, a week from the full, I reckon, and we've been a week on the way last night, when up pops a new moon as thin as a nail paring, as if we'd never stayed no time in the Elvish country. Well, I can remember 3 nights there for certain, and I seem to remember several more, but I would take my oath it was never a whole month. Anyone would think that time didn't count in there."
"And perhaps that was the way of it," said Frodo. "In that land, maybe, we were in a time that has elsewhere long gone by. It was not, I think, until Silverload bore us back to Anduin that we returned to the time that flows through mortal lands to the great sea. And I don't remember any moon, either new or old, in Carascalathon, only stars by night and sun by day."
Legolas stirred in his boat.
"Nay, time does not tarry ever," he said, "but change and growth is not in all things and places alike. For the elves the world moves, and it moves both very swiftly and very slow. Swift, because they themselves change little, and all else fleets by. It is a grief to them. Slow, because they do not count the running years, not for themselves. The passing seasons are but ripples ever repeated in the long stream. Yet beneath the sun all things must wear to an end at last."
"But the wearing is slow in Lorien," said Frodo. "The power of the lady is on it. Rich are the hours, though short they seem, in Carascalathon, where Galadriel wields the elven ring."
"That should not have been said outside Lorien, not even to me," said Aragorn. "Speak no more of it." "But so it is, Sam. In that land you lost your count. Their time flowed swiftly by us, as for the elves. The old moon passed, and a new moon waxed and waned in the world outside while we tarried there. And yestereve a new moon came again. Winter is nearly gone. Time flows on to a spring of little hope."
The night passed silently. No voice or call was heard again across the water. The travellers huddled in their boats felt the changing of the weather. The air grew warm and very still under the great moist clouds that had floated up from the south and the distant seas. The rushing of the river over the rocks of the rapids seemed to grow louder and closer. The twigs of the trees above them began to drip. When the day came, the mood of the world about them had become soft and sad. Slowly the dawn grew to a pale light, diffused and shadowless. There was mist on the river, and white fog swathed the shore. The far bank could not be seen.
"I can't abide fog," said Sam, "but this seems to be a lucky one.
Now perhaps we can get away without those cursed goblins seeing us.
Perhaps so, said Aragorn, but it will be hard to find the path unless the fog lifts a little later on, and we must find the path if we're to pass San Gebir and come to the Emin Wheel.
I do not see why we should pass the rapids or follow the river any further, said Boromir. If the Emin Wheel lies before us, then we can strike westward and southward until we come to the Entwash and cross into my own land.
We can, if we are making for Minas Tirith, said Aragorn, but that is not yet agreed, and such a course may be more perilous than it sounds. The Vale of Entwash is flat and fenny, and fog is a deadly peril there for those on foot and laden. I would not abandon our boats until we must. The river is at least a path that cannot be missed.
But the enemy holds the eastern bank, objected Boromir. And even if you pass the gates of Argonath and come unmolested to the Tindrocks,
what will you do then? Leap down the falls and land in the marshes?
No, answered Aragorn. Say rather that we will bear our boats by the ancient way to Rauros Foot, and there take to the water again. Do you not know, Boromir, or do you choose to forget the North Stair and the High Seat from Armonhend, that were made in the days of the great kings? I at least have a mind to stand in that high place again, before I decide my further course. There, maybe, we shall see some sign that will guide us.
Boromir held out long against this choice, but when it became plain that Frodo would follow Aragorn, wherever he went, he gave in.
It is not the way of the men of Minas Tirith to desert their friends at need, he said, and you will need my strength if ever you are to reach the Tindrock. To the Tall Isle I will go, but no further. There I shall turn to my home, alone if my help has not earned the reward of any companionship.
The day was now growing, and the fog had lifted a little. It was decided that Aragorn and Legolas should at once go forward along the shores, while the others remained by the boats. Aragorn hoped to find some way by which they could carry both their boats and their baggage to the smoother water beyond the rapids.
"Boats of the elves would not sink, maybe," he said, "but that does not say that we should come through San Gebir alive. None have ever done so yet. No road was made by the men of Gondor in this region, for even in their great days their realm did not reach up Anduin beyond the Emin Wheel. But there is a portage way somewhere on the western shore, if I can find it. It cannot yet have perished, for light boats used to journey out of Wilderland down to Osgiliath, and still did so until a few years ago, when the orcs of Mordor began to multiply.
Seldom in my life has any boat come out of the north, and the orcs prowl on the east shore, said Boromir. If you go forward, peril will grow with every mile, even if you find a path.
Peril lies ahead on every southward road, answered Aragorn. Wait for us one day. If we do not return in that time, you will know that evil has indeed befallen us. Then you must take a new leader and follow him as best you can.
It was with a heavy heart that Frodo saw Aragorn and Legolas climb the steep bank and vanish into the mists. But his fears proved groundless. Only 2 or 3 hours had passed, and it was barely midday when the shadowy shapes of the explorers appeared again.
All is well, said Aragorn, as he clambered down the bank. There is a track, and it leads to a good landing that is still serviceable.
The distance is not great. The head of the rapids is but 1/2 mile below us, and they are little more than 1 mile long. Not far beyond them, the stream becomes clear and smooth again, though it runs swiftly. Our hardest task will be to get our boats and baggage to the old portage way. We've found it, but it lies well back from the waterside here, and runs under the lee of a rock wall, 1 furlong or more from the shore. We did not find where the northward landing lies.
If it still remains, we must have passed it yesterday night, We might labour far upstream, and yet miss it in the fog. I fear we must leave the river now, and make for the portage way as best we can from here."
"That would not be easy, even if we were all men," said Boromir.
"Yet such as we are, we will try it," said Aragorn.
"Aye, we will," said Gimli. "The legs of men will lag on a rough road, while a dwarf goes on. Be the burden twice his own weight, Master Boromir."
The task proved hard indeed, yet in the end it was done. The goods were taken out of the boats and brought to the top of the bank, where there was a level space. Then the boats were drawn out of the water and carried up. They were far less heavy than any had expected. Of what tree growing in the elvish country they were made, not even Legolas knew, but the wood was tough and yet strangely light. Merry and Pippin alone could carry their boat with ease along the flat. Nonetheless, it needed the strength of the two men to lift and haul them over the ground that the company now had to cross. It sloped up, away from the river, a tumbled waste of grey limestone boulders, with many hidden holes shrouded with weeds and bushes. There were thickets of brambles and sheer dells, and here and there boggy pools fed by waters trickling from the terraces further inland. One by one Boromir and Aragorn carried the boats, while the others toiled and scrambled after them with a baggage. At last all was removed and laid on the portageway. Then, with little further hindrance, save from sprawling briars and many fallen stones, they moved forward altogether. Fog still hung in veils upon the crumbling rock wall, and to their left mist shrouded the river. They could hear it rushing and foaming over the sharp shelves and stony teeth of San Gebir, but they could not see it. Twice they made the journey before all was brought safe to the southern landing. There the portage way, turning back to the waterside, ran gently down to the shallow edge of a little pool. It seemed to have been scooped in the riverside, not by hand, but by the water swirling down from San Gebir against a low pier of rock that jutted out some way into the stream. Beyond it the shore rose sheer into a grey cliff, and there was no further passage for those on foot. Already the short afternoon was past, and a dim clouded dusk was closing in. They sat beside the water, listening to the confused rush and roar of the rapids hidden in the mist. They were tired and sleepy, and their hearts were as gloomy as the dying day.
"Well, here we are, and here we must pass another night," said Boromir. "We need sleep, and even if Aragorn had a mind to pass the gates of Argonath by night, we're all too tired, except, no doubt, our sturdy dwarf." Gimli made no reply. He was nodding as he sat.
"Let us rest as much as we can now," said Aragorn. "Tomorrow we must journey by day again.
Unless the weather changes once more and cheats us, we shall have a good chance of slipping through, unseen by any eyes on the eastern shore. But tonight two must watch together in turns, 3 hours off and one on guard."
Nothing happened that night worse than a brief drizzle of rain an hour before dawn. As soon as it was fully light they started. Already the fog was thinning. They kept as close as they could to the western side, and they could see the dim shapes of the low cliffs rising ever higher, shadowy walls with their feet in the hurrying river. In the mid-morning the clouds drew down lower, and it began to rain heavily. They drew the skin covers over their boats to prevent them from being flooded and drifted on. Little could be seen before them or about them through the grey falling curtains. The rain, however, did not last long. Slowly the sky above grew lighter, and then suddenly the clouds broke, and their draggled fringes trailed away northward up the river. The fogs and mists were gone. Before the travellers lay a wide ravine, with great rocky sides to which clung, upon shelves and in narrow crevices, a few thorn trees. The channel grew narrower and the river swifter,
Now they were speeding along with little hopes of stopping or turning, whatever they might meet ahead. Over them was a lane of pale blue sky, around them the dark, overshadowed river, and before them black, shutting out the sun, the hills of Emin Muil, in which no opening could be seen. Frodo, peering forward, saw in the distance two great rocks approaching. Like great pinnacles or pillars of stone they seemed. Tall and sheer and ominous they stood upon either side of the stream. A narrow gap appeared between them, and the river swept the boats towards it.
"Behold the Argonath, the pillars of the kings!" cried Aragorn. "We shall pass them soon. Keep the boats in line, and as far apart as you can. Hold the middle of the stream!"
As Frodo was borne towards them, the great pillars rose like towers to meet them. Giants they seemed to him, vast grey figures, silent but threatening. Then he saw that they were indeed shaped and fashioned. The craft and power of old had wrought upon them, and still they preserved through the suns and rains of forgotten years the mighty likenesses in which they had been hewn. Upon great pedestals founded in the deep waters stood two great kings of stone. Still with blurred eyes and crannied brows they frowned upon the north. The left hand of each was raised palm outwards in gesture of warning. In each right hand there was an axe. Upon each head there was a crumbling helm and crown. Great power and majesty they still wore, the silent wardens of a long-vanished kingdom. Awe and fear fell upon Frodo, and he cowered down, shutting his eyes and not daring to look up as the boat drew near. Even Boromir bowed his head as the boats whirled by, frail and fleeting as little leaves under the enduring shadow of the sentinels of Númenor. So they passed into the dark chasm of the gates. Sheer rose the dreadful cliffs to unguessed heights on either side. Far off was the dim sky. The black waters roared and echoed, and a wind screamed over them. Frodo, crouching over his knees, heard Sam in front muttering and groaning. "What a place! What a horrible place! Let me get out of this boat, and I'll never wet my toes in a puddle again, let alone a river."